Okay. Number two, list the references, book and chapter of the accounts when Jesus was a baby or a child.
Matthew 2:52.
That's right. And which came first in time order? Luke 2, and then Matthew 2 came later. Okay, number three. How many shepherds were present according to the biblical account?
More than one.
More than one. That's all we know. We do not have a number. We do know it's plural, so it's more than one. Okay, how many wise men?
More than one.
More than one. That's all we know. There was not three. And they were not kings. There's no mention of any kings. All that is made up, and they've even named the supposed three kings. And, they even have one coming from Ethiopia, which that is south of Jerusalem. I don't know how they ever got that coming from the east. So they're just kind of making things up, society has, through the years. And it's got all twisted. Number four. List the possible use or uses for the gifts given to baby Jesus.
For travel expenses.
That I think that is the reason why God had the wise men show up, because we know they were in poverty, and He gave them gold and then valuable frankincense and myrrh. But at very least, the gold would have helped finance their trip, because they had to leave that night and to go to Egypt and then on their way back. So, this would be God provides for His own, and He did not send His Jesus and the family out empty-handed.
Now, you've mentioned that the frankincense was used to anoint kings, and the myrrh was a burial incense.
Yes. That's probably was what that was symbolizing.
Well, we could go back and also think about what was the name that was anointing Jesus' feet? The oil?
Yes.
Before he buried.
That's right. And so this could have all been symbolizing. These wise men obviously had knowledge that came from God somehow, that they all, because they knew to show up, and nobody else knew anything about Jesus had been born, none in Jerusalem. It panicked the whole city. So yes, I think that's very likely that they had knowledge about all things that was to come. These are good comments. Any other comments or questions so far? Yes. And they did use it as a medicine back in ancient times. That is right. That's a good point. Okay. Number five. Where was Jesus when the wise men came to Him? In a manger or in a house? In a house. He was in a house when the wise men came, and He was in the manger when the shepherds came. But He was in a house when the wise men came to see Jesus. Number six. Did the wise men ever meet the shepherds according to the text?
No.
No, they never met each other. And, you see these manger scenes out in people's yards, and they're standing right next to each other. Okay. Now, our other brother, Paul, came up with this number seven. It says, circle who was not specifically mentioned to be found when Jesus was lying in the manger. So, what we'll point out, who is not mentioned to be found when Jesus was lying in the manger. Was Herod?
No.
No. Was Jesus present?
Yes.
How about angels?
No.
They'd already left. They usually put those in these manger scenes, but the angels only came to the shepherds out in the field, and they already left before the shepherds went into Bethlehem to see Jesus. Okay, was Joseph present?
Yes.
Was Anna present, the prophetess? No, she was not. That was after Jesus was at least 40 days old. Was Mary present?
Yes.
Were the shepherds present?
Yes.
Yes. Were the wise men present?
No.
Was Simeon present?
No.
Were the priests present?
No.
Were sheep present, listed as present?
No.
No, they're not listed now, you know. Jesus was in a manger, which a manger is a feeding trough for animals. So there may have been animals there. That's not contrary to the text, but they are not listed. So if you're going to be strict to the text, they were not there or not to be listed. Now we'll turn the page over. What we did, this is a more comprehensive list of a timeline of events than I showed you earlier in the first presentation. What I will do here is just read the order of events that they are. And you can go home, since yours is blank. If you want to, you can fill it out yourself, but we will give you the answers. So I think that will be the easiest, because it is somewhat complicated and complex to try to figure all this out for sure in a group setting. So I'll just read to you the order that everything happened. Okay, and we're on the top left first. So the first thing that happened was Joseph and Mary leave Nazareth and go to Bethlehem. Number two, Jesus is born in a manger. The third thing, an angel appears to the shepherds. Fourth, the shepherds go to Bethlehem to see Jesus. And fifth, when Jesus is 8 days old, he is circumcised and named. Okay. Any questions or comments on that?
You might go over it one more time.
Oh, okay. The first thing that happened was Joseph and Mary leave Nazareth and go to Bethlehem. Then Jesus is born in a manger. An angel appears to the shepherds. The shepherds go to Bethlehem to see Jesus. And then when Jesus is 8 days old, he is circumcised and named. Okay. Now, on the top right, the next thing that happens, Mary completes her 40-day waiting period, according to Leviticus chapter 12, then takes Jesus to the temple to present him to the Lord. Then, the next thing, the wise men come from Jerusalem, come to Jerusalem from the east. Then, number three, Herod and all Jerusalem are disturbed after hearing the possibility of the birth of the Messiah. Number four, King Herod gathers the chief priests and scribes to see where the Christ was to be born. And number five, the wise men are told to look for the King of the Jews in Bethlehem. Okay, so I'll go over this again. Number one, Mary completes her 40-day waiting period, then takes Jesus to the temple to present him to the Lord. The wise men come to Jerusalem from the east. Then Herod and all Jerusalem are disturbed after hearing the possibility of the birth of the Messiah. King Herod gathers the chief priests and scribes to see where the Christ was to be born, and the wise men are told to look for the King of the Jews in Bethlehem. Okay. Okay. It'd be the bottom left here. What do y'all think is number one out of those five things? I'll read them and then see if y'all put them in order. I'll read them from top to bottom. The star that the wise men had seen in the east went before them and shone over the place where Jesus was. The wise men leave Jerusalem and head toward Bethlehem. Upon entering the house, the wise men worshiped Jesus and presented him with gifts. The wise men returned to their own country by another road, and the wise men receive a divine message in a dream. Okay, well,
the first one is the wise men receive a divine message in a dream.
Now that and I may have that may be a little confusing. What I meant to put on that was to let them know to go to don't go back to Herod, but go to their country a different way.
Okay.
So that wasn't the first thing. Well, okay, but before that was the second phrase there, the wise men leave Jerusalem and head toward Bethlehem. And then the second thing is, they left Jerusalem, go toward Bethlehem, and that's when the star came out of the sky and led them to Bethlehem and stopped over the house where Jesus was staying. So the number here, the first one is 2, and then the second one is 1. What would you think be the third thing of the last three? That's right. Upon entering the house, the wise men worshiped Jesus and presented him with gifts. What would be number 4 of the last two? That's right. The wise men receive a divine message in a dream. And the fifth thing is the wise men return to their own country by another road. Okay, how about the bottom right? I'll read them here. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus travel to Egypt. Joseph, Mary, and Jesus go to Nazareth. Joseph receives a message from an angel in a dream to take Jesus out of the land of Israel. After Herod's death, the Lord's angel appears to Joseph, saying it is safe to return to the land of Israel. Herod orders the killing of all male children in Bethlehem less than 2 years old. So out of those, what was the first thing that happened? Joseph receives a message from an angel in a dream to take Jesus out of the land of Israel. What's the second thing?
Joseph married Jesus and traveled to Egypt.
That's right. At the top. That's number 2. What is the third thing? That's right. Herod orders the killing of all male children in Bethlehem less than 2 years old. What's the fourth one?
After Herod's death,
the Lord's angel appears to Joseph saying it is safe to return to the land of Israel. And then the fifth thing, the last thing that happens in both accounts, is Joseph, Mary, and Jesus go to Nazareth. Okay. Okay, yes, yes.
You can go through
the other timeline. Here's the answers. Now, what I would like us to think about and see if anybody has any thoughts or comments about. Who have you ever thought about who the wise men were and where they came from? Obviously, they knew to look in the sky for the Messiah star, and when the star appeared, they traveled to Jerusalem. So they had some kind of knowledge that nobody else did, because the star obviously was not for the Jews or the Hebrews. If it was, nobody noticed. But these men did.
What were the wise men?
The wise men, the Greek word that gets translated as wise men is magi, which is a Greek word that we get use the term magician. Basically, they were the scientists of the day. That's They might have done some trickery and things, which probably did, but they were known as the scientists and had the scientific knowledge of the day, the Magi did. But we would call them scientists. Now, you know, they didn't know science, not near as advanced as we are today. They were also stargazers, which would explain they were looking at the stars and would know how to identify one. But has anyone ever thought about who they might have been and where they came from? All the text says is they came from the east. Okay?
This may be a different subject. But
yes.
Wasn't there three gifts given at their arrival?
Yes, when the wise men... Yes, that's where they get the three. But according to the text, we're not told how many they were. But yes, that's exactly where I think that they get three wise men being there. But have you ever thought about or ever heard anything about where they, what country they may have come from? Or
Persia.
That is what most... people think, and the reason that they get that, it, now Persia is modern day what? What country is that today?
Iran.
And they get that from the Zoroastrians were stargazers, and they were also known as the wise men, and they history says that they were the origination of the wise men, and they were stargazers. So most people say that that's where they came from. Now, the problem is they were pagan and idolatrous worshipers. Do these wise men, when they show up, do they seem to be pagan and idolatrous? They seem to be very righteous and godly people, and they are looking for the one true God's Messiah. And they want to come and worship Him and give Him treasures and gifts. So that's why I had a little bit of trouble, but you are right. That's who, where most people say they come from. Have a little study for, and we can start it here in this class, for start it and then we'll conclude it for the third session, is something that, you know, and we are not told, so we do not know, but I'd like to present some circumstantial evidence and a possibility of who they were and where they came from. First of all, is there any questions or comments on this quiz before we leave this?
Well, the lands and all the prophets that prophesied by Christ coming.
Yes.
Those wise men, do we have any other record except in Luke and Matthew?
No.
If nobody's coming at birth, what are we going to do? Save the people, then the Gentile will come in that remain given. But I was making that point about the wise men, and that is interesting. But they came to worship. They were seeking.
That's right. They came to worship the Messiah.
And then you look at the count, where he came from.
That's right.
The Gentiles are going to eventually come in.
That's right. The Gentiles eventually come in.
That's the mention of the Gentiles are going to be the other people.
Right. Right. And you have a comment?
I have a question before we move on.
Yes, yes.
It has to do with about where it says in Matthew that the Jerusalem was troubled. I'm having a hard time understanding why they would be troubled unless...
Okay.
Because it's supposed to be not a troubling thing, but a wonderful thing.
Okay. I think another word that could be used there is panicked. Because let's think of this. Here, wise men show up from a foreign country, and they are announcing that the Messiah has been born, and not a one of them have heard about it. So they are all panicked. The Messiah has been born. Where is he? Why have we not been notified? They all would have all wanted to, of course, gone to see him. I think is more of a panicked and disturbed of how could this have happened and we didn't know anything about it. Which, you know, also looking at the text, we read in Luke 2, the shepherds told lots of people, or several people, it says all that they ran into, they told about what they had been told from the angel and that they had gone to see the Messiah. And I don't know why that didn't spread. I would have thought that that they would have had all kinds of people and everyone would have been notified. Maybe they were, and then they were out in the fields. I had read somewhere that they were possibly migrating through, and maybe they went on past and went to a different area and telling people as they went. But, you know, Bethlehem was a very small town. I researched one, and a population that somebody came up with was approximately 500. So you would think in a small town like that, even just word of mouth about local neighbors and all would have gotten around, but there's no indication that anyone else knew anything. But that is a very good point. I wonder myself, why was Jerusalem so disturbed and troubled, but they had not heard about it? So that was my, yes.
You know, just to emphasize the point that I think, E.J. was making, okay, is that the likelihood of these wise men being pagans, why would God want to direct pagans to worship his son Jesus? And then why would God warn pagans? I mean, you know, if we have evidence of that, it's going to be very sparse throughout, you know, the Old Testament. So this would be an indication that they were not pagans.
That's right, and not polytheists. They didn't believe in multiple gods, obviously. And God was with them providentially because he, number one, he provided this star for them. He brought it out of the sky, led them to Bethlehem, and showed them the exact house where Jesus was staying, and then warned them in a dream. So these, from all the accounts, they had to be righteous worshipers of the one true and living God, and not pagan, not polytheist, not idolatrous worshipers, that most all of these that were called wise men in history were. Yes?
If they came from Persia, it's possible that they were Jews.
Okay.
Left over, they were still there for captivity.
Okay. 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 Now you hit on right there what that you and led right into where I want to have a little study about, because I think that may be a key as to who they were and where they came from, and we'll go over Daniel chapter 1 and 2. And look at that and give some circumstantial evidence and what he's referring to is King Nebuchadnezzar took the Jews, the Hebrews, into Babylonian captivity, and after that then they went back to a lot of people went back to Jerusalem, but then they were also under Persian or modern-day Iran, because the Medo-Persians took over after the Babylonians were in power, which we will go over that in our lesson. But I think that is a key to who they are and where they come from. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll just kind of, while we still have some class time, we'll start this next topic And here is a map. This is Jerusalem right here. This is Babylon, and this is where the Hebrews were taken into Babylonian captivity. It was, I think, about 580 or so B.C. Now, this is approximately 500 miles between Jerusalem and Babylon. And you see it is east of Jerusalem. So that fits our narrative. And it's across this Arabian desert. Now, most historians don't think that they crossed this desert because it's no water, no food. It's a very perilous journey. But instead, we'll go over this first. There were three deportations of the Jews into Babylonian captivity. The Arabian Desert is between Jerusalem and Babylon. It's about straight 500 miles, a straight line between Jerusalem and Babylon. They likely took the route of the King's Highway along the Jordan and Euphrates River, and that was about a 1,000-mile trip. But so they likely went twice as far, 1,000 miles instead of 500, but it's much less harsh conditions, it's easier travel, more availability of food and water. And this is the route that most people think the Jews were deported into Babylon. And this is the King's Highway here. I have another map showing it. And then they just traveled the Euphrates River down till they hit to Babylon. Now, as we're going through, we'll run into the term Chaldea. Chaldea was the country that Babylon was the capital of. So as we're going through, we'll see Chaldea, but that just means, I think it's probably another word for Babylonian, Chaldean. So they were taken into Babylonian or Chaldean captivity, is what the Hebrews were. This is a map of the King's Highway. It went this way. See, Jerusalem's right here. Babylon's right here. But this was a highly traveled route, and that they did a lot of trade up and down this route, which it went all the way over here to Egypt. But this was likely the path that they took instead of going straight across this desert. Here's another map showing captivity of Judah, 586 to 516. And this 586 was the third deportation of people over into Babylon. And they were in captivity for 70 years. So that's what this map and date's showing here. Okay. I'll just summarize first. We'll turn to the book of Daniel, and we'll read chapter 2, but first I'll just try to summarize Daniel chapter 1 to get us a context of what we're dealing with, and a setting of what's going on. At the first, King Nebuchadnezzar says, verse 1, besieges Jerusalem, and it takes the Hebrews into captivity. Along with the ones that are taken into captivity is Daniel, and he had three friends, which we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Now, verse 6 lists them. Now, this in verse 6 is their Hebrew names, We only know Daniel from his Hebrew name. Now, they are given Chaldean names, and that's the only way that we know Daniel's three friends, by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Chaldean names, and we don't know Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, but those were their Hebrew names. And then we don't know Daniel from his Chaldean name, Belteshazzar. We just know him as Daniel, so I don't know how that got swapped out that way, but that's the way that it has been. So Daniel and his three friends are thought to be young teenagers, maybe 14, 15, 16 years old, something like that, whenever they are taken into captivity. What happens with them? They are, the king is looking from verse 4, young men that have no blemish, they are good looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, and have the ability to serve in the king's palace. So obviously Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fit that description. They were smart, good looking, and young. So they went through, I would say, an intense three-year training course. We get that from verse 5, 3 years of training, so that they could get the knowledge, the Chaldean knowledge. They had to learn the language, and they went into their scientific knowledge and everything in this training to be able to serve the king. The problem that is presented here in chapter 1 is the king, Nebuchadnezzar, was wanting to give them the greatest, what he considered was the greatest food and drink. So they, I'm sure they, it was real good as far as good tasting and keep them all healthy. The problem was three things. They were unclean meats that the Hebrews could not eat, so that would include pork. Probably had a steady diet of pork. Number two, it was meats that may have been clean to eat for the Hebrews, but it was sacrificed to idols. So that was against God's law, so they could not eat those foods, a Hebrew that wanted to be faithful and righteous to God. And then the third thing, they were not to drink any alcohol. So, and the king served them wine, with alcoholic wine. So Daniel and his three friends run into a problem right off the bat, which, you know, very likely these were not the only four people that got selected to go through this, of the Hebrews that went through this three-year training, but they're the only ones listed that had an objection to this. Probably the others just went along, and you could kind of see the pressure. You're in a foreign land. You're taken into slavery, captivity. You probably, you know, it would be easy to just do as you're told, but you see the backbone in the righteousness of Daniel and his three friends right here. They stand up against that, and they have a request to the chief of the eunuchs, the one that's in charge to take care of them. Daniel goes to him and says, instead of eating these fine delicacies from the king that's unclean to us, would it be okay if we become vegetarians or are vegetarians and just eat vegetables and only drink water? The Ashpenaz is the chief of the eunuch's name, that he was their steward. He said, well, if I do that, the problem is, you're not going to stay healthy. You're going to lose weight. It says that their face will be drawn and distorted. And whenever you go before the king, the king's going to kill me because I've been given in charge to keep y'all in utmost health and keep y'all well fed. and you're not going to remain healthy and going to lose weight, and the king will take it out on me. And so Daniel then gives him another proposition and says, well, let's do this, a 10-day test. We get that from verse 14. And we'll eat just the vegetables and drink the water. After 10 days, you compare us to everyone else that's eating the king's delicacies and the unclean meats and drinking the alcohol. You compare the two of us. Then if you see that we are in worse shape and we're emaciated, then you can do as you see fit. But if you see that we are in just as good a shape, you allow us to keep going with the vegetables and water. Well, Ashpenaz thought, okay, well, that sounded like a good deal to him. So he allowed them to do that, and at the end of the 10 days, he looked at them, and they were actually fatter than all of the other young men that had been eating the king's delicacies and drinking the wine. So that Daniel had a great proposition, and he was right, and it went through, it went in Daniel and God's favor. So they were allowed to just eat vegetables and drink water only. So that was the first thing that Daniel and his three friends came up against when they got taken into captivity, and they stood for God, and it came out, it worked out well. Now, at the end of the three-year period, I will read this. Verse 16, that concludes this story about what they were eating. Thus the steward took away their portion of delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. So then they were allowed to eat vegetables and drink water. Verse 17. As for these four men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, this is at the end of the three-year training period, when the king had said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before King Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, and this is Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. So, after the 3 years were up, all of the young men came before King Nebuchadnezzar, and the king interviewed them, and he found that Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were 10 times more, number one, they were way more knowledgeable than anyone else. They interviewed and were more knowledgeable than any of the other young boys. And the king also found them to be 10 times more knowledgeable than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm, which he had a big Babylonian empire. So you can tell that God was with these four young men, and God gave them, gave Daniel and his three friends miraculous knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom from verse 17. And then God gave Daniel a special gift that is not listed on the other three. Verse 17, Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. And that is going to come into particular importance in chapter 2 that we will go over in the third lesson. And this will, at least with the circumstantial evidence, provide us with the possibility of who these wise men were and where they came from. We already know that location is the right location. Babylon is east of Jerusalem. And so we'll go more at that time. Are there any questions or comments up to this point about anything we've talked about? Okay, then we'll end the class at this time.